Let's go first to the United States, where the church of George Washington, Franklin Roosevelt, and George Bush Sr. is in crisis. The Episcopal Church is the U.S. branch of the Anglicans, and it was once very influential. 10 presidents and more than a third of the Supreme Court justices have been Episcopalians. It was the first church, the first mainstream church, to ordain women, the first to consecrate an openly gay bishop. But over the past 20 years, the church has lost more than a third of its members. It's down to 2.3 million people today. And now, after its convention in Indianapolis, the Episcopal Church appears to be on the brink of collapse. BeliefNet.com reports that 46 members of the synod have spoken in favour of seceding from the Episcopal Church. 6 bishops have petitioned the Archbishop of Canterbury for permission to take their diocese out of the church, but remain within the worldwide Anglican Communion. So what lies behind these developments? Attending the convention was the author, journalist, and Episcopal priest from Florida, George Conger.
They focused on human sexuality, specifically blessings for same-sex couples. And also there were some secondary issues of welcoming transsexuals and transgendered people into the full life of the church.
And it was indeed quite divisive. I noticed that in a report that you wrote, some 12 of the bishops issued a dissenting statement.
Yes, 12 of the what I would characterize as conservative evangelical bishops, after the votes were all finished, put forth a statement saying that though they will remain in the Episcopal Church, they will not authorize gay blessings in their diocese, and they essentially will not cooperate with the agenda of bringing homosexuality into the mainstream of the Anglican Church in the United States.
Could their refusal to countenance blessings of same-sex and gay relationships lead to any disciplinary action from the upper echelons of the Episcopal Church?
No, for two reasons. First, part of the deal that allowed this to be passed, there was an opportunity for a parliamentary challenge where the bishops would be required to have a supermajority to pass this if they worded it in a certain way. And the supporters of gay rights were not going to get that supermajority this time around. However, the conservatives did not push that issue, but rather carved out for themselves a conscience clause saying that no bishop, no priest, no minister anywhere in the Episcopal Church can be compelled to perform gay blessings, plus a bishop may refuse to allow gay blessings in his diocese. So there was a carve-out for the conservatives. And second, the Episcopal Church is more like the Australian Church than the Church of England, meaning the dioceses have a very high degree of autonomy. So what happens in New York, for instance, really doesn't affect what happens, for instance, for me down in Central Florida in the Orlando area.
Now, you've said that the 12 dissenting bishops will not leave the Episcopal Church, but how viable is their continuing to stay in the church? Because I've heard that up to 6 dioceses are considering leaving the church altogether. A number of bishops on the moderate to conservative or orthodox end have decided to petition the Archbishop of Canterbury to leave the Episcopal Church. So, I mean, how uneasy is this accommodation?
It's very uneasy. And the question of leaving is a very tricky one. Those of an Anglo-Catholic persuasion, many of them have already left, and those are the people who would leave first. And the reason is that in an Anglo-Catholic understanding of the church, they have a very centralized idea, a very hierarchical concept of the church. For evangelicals, that's different. They have a more dispersed, almost a semi-congregationalist view. So for those who have what is called a low church view of how the church is to be structured, there's no reason for them to leave because they cannot be compelled to do anything against their conscience. For those of an Anglo-Catholic persuasion, that's a very live issue, and some of them may indeed leave.
A recent piece in BeliefNet.com by Rob Kirby quotes Bishop Peter Beckworth of Springfield, Illinois, describing the church as being, quote, in meltdown.
Yes, it is in meltdown, but the meltdown is uneven. For instance, the Diocese of South Carolina, which is one of the more conservative dioceses, its deputation essentially walked out of the convention and its bishop left. They all went home a day early because they could not countenance what took place. The Diocese of South Carolina is growing. It's adding people. It's doing quite well locally. It's bucking the trends, whereas the National Episcopal Church has lost 40% of its membership since the 1960s and 10% of its membership over the last 10 years. South Carolina has gone in the opposite direction. So there are pockets of growth all across the United States for the Episcopal Church, as well as Presbyterians and Lutherans, who are also seeing their, what we call mainline denominations, nationally fall apart. Locally, some are doing quite well.
Now, as I understand it, this tension within the Episcopal Church has been brewing perhaps for several decades, and that these controversies, these divisions over same-sex marriage principally, but also the ordination of openly gay and lesbian clergy, are really a relatively recent development, that there's a lot of deep doctrinal divisions well behind this.
Yes. The presiding bishop, Bishop Catherine Jefferts Schori, at the 2009 General Convention, gave a sermon where she said that Jesus is a way to salvation. In other words, a good Muslim, a good Buddhist, could be saved through their own faith systems, that there is no exclusive claim to salvation being put forward by followers of Jesus Christ. Now, that is something a traditional Christian would reject out of hand, and many Episcopalians reject that sort of view out of hand. It is more exciting to talk about homosexuality and transvestites and things like that. That's sort of interesting pub-type talk. But deep down, we have a very different picture of who Jesus is, how we read the Bible, how we interpret the Bible, how we apply that to our lives. I interviewed an archbishop from South America named Gregory Venables in 2008 at a meeting of all the archbishops of the Anglican Communion, and he told me that Catherine Jefferts Schori was not a Christian as he understands Christianity. And that's a public statement by one of the national leaders of the Anglican Communion. And that view is fairly widespread, that there is a very strong doctrinal divide along the very basics of the Christian faith. And that's been going on since the 1960s.
What has Bishop Jefferts Schori been saying about issues beyond this question of a singular way to salvation? What's she been saying about finding the God within us? I mean, things that many people would consider rather New Age-ish.
Yes, she does use much of the vocabulary and imagery of the New Age woman movement. And we joke that she was educated in California near San Francisco, so she can't help that probably. But she is a representative of a form of liberal modern Christianity that draws upon many different faith movements and imagery taken from everything from Hinduism to Quakerism and everything in between, of finding, you know, the God that is within you. And Jesus is an exemplar of how we are to live. And language that an evangelical or an Anglo-Catholic would use about the atonement, where an evangelical would say, my sins, your sins, the debt that we owe to God for our sinful behavior was paid by the death of Jesus Christ on the cross. That is not something that Bishop Jefferts Schori finds persuasive.
Canon Conger, do you believe that the Episcopal Church, like the Anglican Church worldwide, could perhaps muddle along on these issues, having differences over sexuality, if the Episcopal Church had settled doctrines and stuck to those settled doctrines on basic Christian precepts of salvation and the divinity of Christ?
Yes, I do. My sense of talking to people across the spectrum of the Episcopal Church in the United States is that if we had the basics down, then we could work through these secondary issues, be they the ordination of women bishops or clergy, be it gay marriage, be all of those issues that are in the news right now. Our second order issues compared to who is Jesus Christ, what must I do to be saved, and what does salvation look like?
Journalist and Episcopal priest George Conger on the precarious future of America's once dominant church. You're with the Religion and Ethics Report here on RN. I'm Andrew West.